Northern Colorado never stops. Neither do we. This is NoCo Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. Here's Tanner Schwint.
Good Monday afternoon, Northern Colorado. Thanks for joining us here live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. This is NoCo Now. Ryan Kelly doing the production work. I am Tanner Schwint. And so I always judge, you know, how the show is going to go. Do we need to get some VIP guests in here? Do we really need... Today, my goodness, my head is about to explode with how many news stories that we have. Just a ton of them that we're going to get to. Really Northern Colorado centricated as well. Like it's all about NoCo, which is why the name of the show is NoCo Now. But we've got a bunch of news stories to get to. Obviously, the big story coming out of CSU, we're going to dive into that amidst racial allegations. There's a story that came out of the Colorado and hidden in plain sight. CSU football staff accused of racial insensitivity and abuse. So we'll dive into that a little bit. We're going to save some of that. We'll have Kevin Lytle on tomorrow, of course, to work through all of that. Kevin Lytle and Miles Blumhart working together on that story. So we'll get to that. COVID-19 numbers. Hey, it's hard to find a news outlet right now that just reports, okay, here's this. This is the positive side that we're seeing. Here's why there's some concern. Overall, good trend. I've quoted this guy a couple of times on the program, Chris Vanderveen. He's the director of reporting for 9 News. He's going to be joining us about 4:35. The numbers are in to date, and they're actually pretty damn good. And so we're going to talk to Chris about how he's been reporting on this. We're going to talk about local journalism because that seems to be a hot button topic right now to discuss, because you've got a couple of local, you know, you've got local outlets breaking news still, and it's not a secret that local reporting and local journalism has been hit hard in the way of social media and this instant knee-jerk reaction that we see. So we're going to talk about exactly why is it so important, and we're going to dive into that. We're going to talk anonymous sources. Really excited about that interview, but this is NoCo Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. Let's get to NoCo News. Let's start first with the Tribune by Trevor Reed. A detention deputy with the Weld County Sheriff's Office is on leave after a weekend arrest on suspicion of drunk driving and leaving the scene of a crash. Greeley police responded about 1:30 a.m. Saturday to a crash on U.S. 34 bypass over there by the Promontory Parkway. Police found an unoccupied black Acura with fresh damage to the front left side. After a search in a nearby field, police found the registered owner of the vehicle, 38-year-old Michael Ryan, in a marshy area, according to a release from the Greeley Police Department. Ryan showed signs of heavy intoxication, refused to perform roadside maneuvers, and refused chemical testing, police said. He refused to speak with officers. Ryan revealed he is a detention deputy at the Weld County Sheriff's Office. He was medically cleared before he was booked at the Weld County Jail on suspicion of careless driving, no proof of insurance, driving under the influence, driving while ability impaired, and hit and run involving highway fixtures. He's been working with the sheriff's office since November 18th of 2019. Ryan is on unpaid administrative leave pending an internal investigation, Moylan said. So not looking good there for Michael Ryan, and the Weld County deputy, the detention deputy arrested. We'll continue to monitor that case when rulings and such come out. Let's go now to Fort Collins police crackdown on illegal homeless camping after emergency sites closure. This coming from Miles Blumhart of the Coloradoan. So this homeless encampment at Heritage Park, they started cracking this down, they put this order in place where they're disbanding the homeless encampment. It's at Heritage Park. It was in late April that they started to do this, writing 3 times more tickets in May than they did in May of 2019. People experiencing homelessness began camping in the park in March, and the number of campers continued to swell until the encampment was disbanded. The camp grew to about 120 tents adjacent to Northside Aslan Community Center, which the city set up as an emergency homeless shelter during the COVID-19 pandemic. We've talked about that way back in April or May when this was starting to set up. As part of that plan, the city made it legal to camp at the park so occupants could receive testing, meals, showers, and other services to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus, because that was one of those communities that was very high on the priority list to try and get awareness to. It was trying to let them know, hey, don't gather, don't underestimate this disease when we were in the very early stages. Police and homeless service workers informed those camping in the park that it would be disbanded April 29th and that illegal camping would not be allowed. Crews cleaned up the park and the Northside Aslan Community Center was transformed back to a recreational facility June 19th. City Council voted to not allow camping on public or private property after the center was closed. Fort Collins Police Chief Jeff Swoboda had this to say, "We gave warnings and we made it known that one of our strategies was we were not going to allow illegal camping to explode. In May, Fort Collins Police issued 71 tickets for illegal camping, including 59 tickets on public property and 12 on private property, according to the Fort Collins Police Services. In May of 2019, police only wrote 23 tickets for illegal camping, 22 on public and 1 on private." So Fort Collins starting to crack down on that illegal camping, and you knew it had to come at a certain point as things start to transition back to more of a normal state, especially in Fort Collins and Larimer County, where they do have that variance, and these centers that you saw where people would go get tested, they had foods, everything like that, start to disband a little bit as the need, well, it's not nearly as great as it was, so we start to see this happen. We're working around NoCo News. If you've got a news story or just some thoughts on what we're talking about, feel free to call in the Alt Female Hotline, 970-353-1310, 970-353-1310, or that text line, 31996-31996. Any new texters, all you have to do to subscribe is text KFKA to 31996, and you'll be ready to go. Let's keep it over in Fort Collins at the Colorado, and shall we? After 130 years, archaeology students unearthed the site of CSU's first building. This from Aaron Udell. I thought this was kind of interesting. With a toothbrush in hand, Colorado State University senior Alyssa Melkus delicately scrubbed debris off a tiny shard of glass Tuesday morning before rinsing it in a bowl of dirt-tinged water and placing it back onto a wood-framed sifting screen. The shard was surrounded by others like it, as well as a cluster of rusty nails, fragments, and a bunch of other stuff that went along with it. By the time these items were found late last month, so this was late July, during an archaeological dig for the CSU Archaeology Field School, they hadn't seen the light of day since at least 1890, when Colorado Agricultural College, now CSU, raised its historic claim building and buried the pieces. For weeks, a group of 10 undergraduate students from the university's Department of Anthropology and Geology have spent their days studying and excavating the building's former site near the southwestern corner of Laurel Street and College Avenue. I mean, Fort Collins has looked a lot different in the last 15 years, let alone from 1890. It's just ridiculous. How do you find where to dig? And, you know, you have to be so... I would have just been walking along. I'm like, oh, somebody broke something. You know, it's insane to me that they finally found this. They have a very nice write-up here in the Colorado. And because of the pandemic, we had to shift our plans for the summer. And luckily, we had this very cool historic archaeology site that's right beneath the lawn here, said Ed Henry, an assistant professor in CSU's Department of Anthropology and Geography and course instructor of the Field School. When the claim building was raised in 1890, boosters of the tiny Colorado Agricultural College probably never pictured students of that same school sifting through its pieces 130 years later, polishing glass shards and mooning over glass beads and a dime. It's students meticulously cleaned. They've got pictures here. It's fascinating. I mean, you have to do this just the right way. In 1890, the last time that building saw any light. Let's keep going around here. Northern Colorado News. Three arrested after fight spins off of pro-police rally in Fort Collins. This coming from Eric Larson. There were three people who were arrested Saturday near Fort Collins Police Services headquarters after attendees of a pro-police rally and protesters fought in a nearby neighborhood. I mean, do I even need to read anymore? Can we just stop being dumb? Like, these protests and rallies are great, right? These protests are what this country was founded on. And I do stand by that. And I have to believe that the majority of people out there have the right intentions. They want to show support for whatever their cause is. You have groups of people, though. You have the uninformed who may be backing something that they don't know anything about, and it could just be a social movement. You have the aggressors, one way or the other. You've got the extremists, aggressors, extremists, that are why there's so many stories about this. And then you got the people that are out there looking for the change or showing their support. And the ones that we read about, and I want to make this perfectly clear, and I think that a lot of people can need this reinforcement sometimes. I know I definitely do, that, you know, we're only going to pay attention to the bad eggs. That's what's going to get reported on. That's what's going to dominate the news headlines. You know, there's peaceful protests still going on. The majority of the people at the rally were at this rally as well, where they were peaceful. And it was actually something that happened a couple of blocks down. There's a video of the brawl, shows a group of men who apparently attended the rally walking toward a group of men clad in black as they backpedal into a nearby neighborhood. As the two groups approach a ditch, a fight breaks out among the group, which can be seen scuffling on the ground, punching each other, and using chokeholds. The altercation lasts less than 2 minutes before the fighting begins to slow. Police arrived at the scene shortly thereafter. The booking log at the Larimer County Jail shows that at least three people were arrested in the area of the fight Saturday, each on misdemeanor allegations, including disorderly conduct. Fort Collins Police Services said another was cited for misdemeanor criminal tampering. The Fort Collins Police Service said on Sunday that both sides of the altercation had quote unquote active aggressors, adding that enforcement action was taken against people identifying with both groups. So just not one bad side or the other. So don't be, I see this instantly in the comments, and we get this all the time. Well, it was just those people. And then you get the other side. Well, it was the other people. And there's I've said this forever. There's idiots on both sides, and taking it to that next level, not a good idea. We respect everyone's right to peacefully assemble. Our officers have consistently supported these rights in recent months as people have gathered to make their voices heard. For the safety of our community, acts of violence and other unlawful behavior have not and will not be tolerated from anyone. Again, Chief Jeff Swoboda said in a written release, truly supporting a cause means representing its values. Committing crimes in our community is not a way to support police. We stand for safety, period. We want all of our community members to feel safe here in Fort Collins, and we reject any form of hate. They've got a link to the video here as well, of the attack. Well, not the attack, but the fight between them. And it's interesting. You can go watch it. A Coloradoan reporter who attended and photographed the rally Saturday noted that the mood of the rally became tense when a group holding Black Lives Matter signs set up across Timberline Road from the rally gathered at FCPS headquarters. The Coloradoan's reporter did not witness the violence, though, that spun off the rally as it occurred blocks away from the main gathering along Timberline. Again, it's those few people who were going to get the spotlight. If everything had gone peacefully here, I'm probably not reading this. I mean, it's probably not getting reported on. The Coloradoan's probably not publishing this. Not because the Coloradoan doesn't do a good job. I mean, you hear me, I quote their pieces all the time. But because it's not flashy. It's not going to garner clicks. You know, And to be quite frank, it's not newsworthy. When you look at the values and the five W's of what you're supposed to report on, it doesn't follow that. So just keep that in mind when you see people reacting to these things. That's the idea. People need to be informed about this negativity that happens, and that's what makes this newsworthy. And it's going to continue to happen for as long as we have these. Well, it's as long as we have humans around, I suppose, is when we're going to have these. I want to get your thoughts. 970-353-1310. 970-353-1310. One last piece of news here to get to. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend. President Trump signs executive orders enacting a $400 unemployment benefit payroll tax cut after coronavirus stimulus talks stall. It was breaking news throughout the weekend. Congress was at an impasse. They couldn't figure out what to do. Believe it or not, Republicans and Democrats weren't getting along and reaching across the aisle there. But President Donald Trump signed a series of executive orders on Saturday to provide temporary relief to Americans who are suffering from the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. At a news conference, President Trump signed four orders that will provide an additional $400 per week in unemployment benefits. That's down $200 from the $600 that was in there originally. Suspend payments on some student loans through the end of the year. Protect renters from being evicted from their homes. And instruct employers to defer certain payroll taxes through the end of the year for Americans who earn less than $100,000 annually. Trump said he decided to act on his own and order the benefits after 2 weeks of negotiations with congressional Democrats collapse without an agreement on a new coronavirus relief package. We've had it, he said. We're going to save American jobs and provide relief to the American worker. But questions remain as to whether Trump has the legal authority to take these actions or the money to pay for them. There's still stuff up in the air, but Congress and the White House had struggled to reconcile Democrats' $3.4 trillion coronavirus relief plan and Senate Republicans' far smaller $1.1 trillion proposal. We're talking trillions, not billions, not millions, trillions of dollars, $2 trillion, $2.3 trillion worth difference. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer met for more than 2 hours Friday with Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows in a last-ditch attempt to salvage discussions, but the talks appeared fruitless, with both sides admitting they were at a standstill with no real path forward. You know, like him or hate him, when there's nothing, when something's not happening and he believes something's going to happen and needs to happen, he's going to make it happen. That's what President Trump did, signing this this relief package and executive order. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I know they're probably going to get challenged on both sides here with the executive order, but we will find out. 4:22 now the time. Want to say thanks to Proactive Physical Therapy and Sports Medicine. They've got locations in Eaton and in Greeley. You don't want to waste your surgery. And I think that that's something that I want to continue to reiterate. And that's what they want to reiterate, is that you can go in and get that surgery and you can get that shoulder fixed. But if you don't heal right, and if you don't work the proper muscles back in the way that you're supposed to, it's not going to go well for you. And they have the expertise, they've got the facilities, they have everything that you need and that they need to give you the best physical therapy care, whether you're a high school athlete, whether you're a college athlete, or whether you're a senior citizen and you just got that that surgery that you need. It's Proactive Physical Therapy. More on ProactiveColorado.com. Closing in on 4:23. Let's get a break. We'll come back on the other side, and we're going to dive in a little bit about this CSU, man. They've been on national headlines. We'll get to that and much, much more. It's NoCo Now on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFK.
Hear Mornings with Gale, weekdays 6 to 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFK.
The time here, NoCo Now. Welcome back in. She said a news release that came through here, Octo Brew Fest, September 9th through Friday, September 11th from 5 to 10 p.m. is going to look a little bit different. Let's see here. This is a release. Plans for Greeley's Oktoberfest 2020 have been greatly scaled back from the usual large event in downtown Greeley's historic Lincoln Park, but event organizers are still going forward with a smaller recognition of this annual tradition. Instead of going forward with the fundraiser for the DDA held in Lincoln Park, we're bringing the celebration to our bars and restaurants in hopes that they reap some benefits since they have been through so much in 2020. We hope we can bring a few more folks down to the open-air seating on the plazas by having some German food available, tap takeovers at the bars, some minimal outdoor entertainment, and a few games and contests, said Allison Hamling. We're also spreading it out over the last 3 days of the open container outdoor seating on the plaza, September 9th through the 11th. So that'll something to look forward to coming up here. Big news coming out of CSU. First, it was the CSU. First, it was the CSU and the COVID-19 restrictions, the fact that they were mishandling it, or the alleged allegations that they were mishandling COVID-19. And Steve Adazio was telling players that if they got the symptoms, then it could end up in reduced playing time. And it was many anonymous sources that came forward. Kevin Lytle of the Colorado One talking about that. Now, over the weekend, hidden in plain sight, CSU football staff accused of racial insensitivity and abuse. This from Miles Bloomhart out of the Colorado. As Miles and Kevin Lytle as well that have put their names on this. This will be one of the longer reads that you dive into, but it's worth it, and it needs to be out there because the headline is, again, one of those things, hidden in plain sight, CSU football staff accused of racial insensitivity and abuse. Then you start seeing people circle around, and they're like, are you kidding me? This, and this. When my takeaway from this, and I'm just going to brush over this today because we're diving into this in a big way tomorrow with Kevin Lytle, but my big takeaway from this, once you read this entire story, is that there is so much gray area in this story that you really can't make a decision. And I don't know, I mean, if you did and you just say jumped one way or the other, I don't know how you did, because it's not clear about what Steve Adazio had done. There's a joke in here from Mike Bobo that is definitely questionable. There's no context in some of it. The joke here, and I'll find it to be sure as look at this article out of the Colorado One. But Mike Bobo said something along the lines of, you know, the lights went out and he looked at one of the players and one of the darker players and said, smile so that we can see you, right? And this is one of the examples that came forward. This one doesn't have a ton of anonymous sources. It does have a couple of anonymous sources, some putting their name behind it. But the fact of the matter is, when you're talking about Steve Adazio, especially right now, you can't say that this man is a racist at all from what is presented in this story. There's not enough there, in my opinion. Now, could I be wrong? Yeah. Could I see how this could escalate more if certain context comes out and it's people could possibly say, hey, I was there. Here's who I am. This is what was exactly said. But a lot of what's in here is talking about Steve Adazio having a big personality and having like a powerful personality. There's people all over the world that have powerful personalities. That doesn't make you racist. I don't know since when that does or even has that conversation come up, but it doesn't. I strongly encourage everybody to go read this. And again, we're going to jump out of here, but go read this. Make sure you come back tomorrow. We're diving full into this. There's a former player and a former, he was an assistant coach, Anthony Hill. He's in the CSU Hall of Fame. He was a black quarterback for CSU. He comes out with some pretty strong words. Some that I don't think are fitting for what is going on here. So we're going to dive into this much more tomorrow with Kevin Lytle, but we do need to take a break because on the other side, we've got Chris Vanderveen joining the program, the director of reporting from 9 News. We're talking COVID numbers. We're talking local journalism. I want to get his thoughts on anonymous sources as well. We've got all of that and much, much more. This is NoCo Now presented by the J9 agencies right here on Northern Colorado's Voice. Let's get to the bottom of the hour news and weather center.
NoCo Now. Weekdays at 4 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 1310 KFKA.
Now on this Monday afternoon, welcome back into NoCo Now, presented by the J9 agencies, live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. We're excited to be with you here. Some breaking news that just came in. The Mountain West Conference has postponed all fall sports. So CSU football and all other fall athletics, for that matter, will be postponed. They are considering a spring season, but that just broke just minutes ago. Joining us now up on the hotline, like I mentioned earlier, it's a guy that I think he puts the COVID-19 numbers pretty straightforward in an understandable way. It is the director of reporting from 9 News, Chris Vanderveen, joining us. Chris, thanks so much for taking time, man. In a world where the news now is coming fast and furious, appreciate you taking some time this afternoon.
Yeah, Tanner, welcome to 2020. Holy cow, it just the news does not stop in this year, and it just keeps going.
Well, and we said it before while we were talking off air here, you were good to go as long as no major news stories broke. I mean, I don't know if the Mountain West canceling falls under that for you, but it's close.
Well, it's interesting. I think you're starting to see the start of those dominoes, and Mountain West is one piece of that domino. I went to University of Colorado myself. I pay very close attention to the University of Colorado football program, and the news is not looking good on that end as well, with the Pac-12 likely making some sort of decision tomorrow.
Right. It's looking like it looks like college football as a whole with some bleak futures ahead, at least for this fall season. But what are your thoughts on the spring season?
Who knows? You know, honestly, I think it's probably best for us to sort of give up making predictions after this year. I think every time we think we know what's going to happen, things change, and you just have to be sort of flexible to the moments, to the day, to the hour sometimes, and you know, don't expect anything until it actually happens, and then you realize that hey, there's your new reality.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Chris. And you know, obviously, one of the big things that we've been watching at first when we talked about COVID-19, it was the hospitalization numbers. That was really what we were pushing. Now it seems like cases are starting to take the front, but there's so many different news outlets reporting so many different things that sometimes it can get confusing. You do a really good job at just putting it out there and kind of interpreting it into the everyman's language, and the numbers, I mean, blatantly, is they're pretty good in Colorado.
Yeah, I think we decided early on here that we wanted to provide numbers, and not just numbers for numbers' sake, but numbers that could provide perspective in terms of how we were doing. And I think what I settled on early is what you said. I started looking at hospitalization numbers, and I look at positivity numbers. How many tests that we're doing result in a positive case of COVID? And as you said, the numbers have really sort of, they've gone up and down, and we've sort of gone through that second rise of cases. And even though case levels are up, the positivity is down, and hospitalizations today is really good news. For the first time in more than a month, there's less than 200 people in the state of Colorado who are hospitalized with confirmed cases of COVID. We have not seen that in so many weeks. That's good news. Does it mean that this is over? Absolutely not. But does it mean that we're trending in a good direction, considering when we had the governor of the state of Colorado about 3 weeks ago really start to sound the alarm bells and say, you know, things could change and hospitalizations are up. And here we are now seeing that they're back down again. For me, that's really good news. Does it mean it's over? No, but I'll take good news right now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, good news when you talk about COVID-19. I mean, those things just haven't gone together for the last 7 or 8 months. But my question is, Chris, it seemed like the rhetoric had changed just a little bit from early on, where it was really hospitalization. What numbers, I mean, do we really need to truly care about at this point? Because if you tried to break down every single stat that came out of this, you'd just go crazy.
I try to keep it simple. I still look at hospitalizations because it's one of those things that, you know, if you test more, if you do more tests, and we're certainly the state, I'm trying to look at what's going on, the latest number, I mean, we're still trending generally over 10,000 tests a day in the state of Colorado. So we're doing many more tests than we were. So, of course, you're going to get more cases. So cases can be a little wonky, but hospitalizations don't lie, meaning if somebody gets sick enough that they have to go to a hospital, that's not a number that can be fudged or manipulated or whatever. It's the reality is the reality. And therefore, I still look at hospitalizations, and then I also look at positivity, and I'm looking for positivity in the state of Colorado right now, and we're at 2.83% on our three-day moving average. We had been hovering around 5%, and 5% is really that sort of magic line. You really don't want to get much above. And about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were getting very close to 5%, in fact, going over it a couple of times. And now we're back down. That's a good sign. I mean, we're doing a lot of tests, and of all the tests that we're doing, only 2.83% of those tests are coming back positive. That's a good sign.
Director of Reporting at 9 News, Chris Vanderveen, joining us. So this kind of begs the question, what's next? I mean, is it simply the mask mandate that has changed this? Is it the fact that we haven't had any schools in gathering? There hasn't been all of this craziness going on. What's next, and where does the governor go now? Does he use these numbers as his new directive?
Well, I think he's going to have to. I think the reality is that the numbers are trending in a good direction. The modeling that they were coming up with 2 or 3 weeks ago was really painting another nightmarish scenario where hospitals start to quickly fill up and you start to reach a point where it becomes difficult to manage. We're not at that point now, but as you note, and we're sort of in another phase. This is a story that has multiple chapters in it, and the next chapter in it is when the schools start to reopen. Now, a lot of schools in the metro area here, they're not going to reopen at the beginning of the year. There are some districts that are going to reopen next week, and they're going to have in-person learning. So that's really the next chapter. What happens there as kids start to go back to school? Do we see an increase of cases? That there's lots of questions, and you sort of have to take it a day, a week, a couple weeks at a time, because, again, as you probably noted, everything you do now, today, you don't know the results of and how it's going to sort of come across in the statistics and the data for another 2 weeks. So it's all the data always lags. We like to say this in the business a lot. The data lags, and it's true. And so, what will happen next as we enter this next phase, where more students start to go back to school in a limited fashion? How does that result? And then you also don't want people to be too complacent and have this idea that it's over, because it's not over. I mean, it's not done. It's not complete. The virus is still. I mean, we still have hundreds of active cases being diagnosed every single day in the state of Colorado. It's far from over, but it's manageable right now, and that's what's key. The hospitals can easily manage the number of cases that are happening right now. The system is not being overwhelmed. And so what happens when we start to turn that valve? I sort of liken it early on to sort of a valve, a spigot, and you would turn it a little bit more, and you'd open up the economy just a little bit. And then you realize, oh, the cases are starting to come back, so you turn it back and you close it just a little bit to the left, and you see what happens, and that's kind of the phase that we're in right now.
As far as mandates, you know, we talk about the mask mandate, you've got the last call being at 10 o'clock. When do we start to see those start to get repealed? And I mean, do we have to wait another month for we to start to see that month of positivity, or where are we at?
I think you're going to see the pressure, particularly with the 10 p.m.
Right.
issue for restaurants, because these are businesses that are very much still struggling right now in terms of trying to get people to come back. And there are a number of businesses that rely on that late night crowd. So I think that's going to be the first thing to push. I don't think you're likely to see an ending of the mask mandate anytime soon, because even if you believe that this is coincidental, that the numbers of the cases are going down and it's just coincidental with the mask mandate, I think there's enough evidence for the governor to say, this is going in the right direction. Why don't we just keep going in this direction? It's not a huge problem for a lot of people. Why don't we just keep that in place? And I think that you're likely to see that for some time to come.
Chris Vanderveen, director of reporting at 9 News. Chris, I'm gonna one of your tweets here. I love this. As vigorously as we report the bad news, we must continue to champion the good days and the good news. We are far from this being over, but in the last 2 weeks, things have gotten better, and I'll take that. This kind of points to a bigger issue, too, of local journalism and a lot of people not being able to get to the narrative that fits where they live. Because on a national scale, when you have something like this, the national reporters aren't going to be talking about, Weld County, Larimer County, probably sometimes not Colorado as a whole.
We have, for better or worse, we have a 50-state solution in this country where all states are sort of working on their own issues by themselves and trying to figure out how best to do this. And to try to come up with a national narrative as to what's going on in this country is nearly impossible. And so that's, I'm always going to be an advocate, as you are, for sort of local journalism and sort of keeping local voices in there. I think it's more important now than ever, particularly in an era where I realize people are skeptical of what they hear from the press. I get it. I understand. I am not the press never makes mistakes kind of guy. I believe that the press can and does make mistakes, but I also believe in the importance of, like, for local journalism, this idea that this is a story that is inherently local. What is happening in Colorado is not happening in Arizona, is not happening in Kansas. What's happening in Weld County is not happening in Denver County, is not happening in Pueblo County. So the importance of people really sort of getting to the bottom of what's going on locally is critically important at a time when, if you just hear the national press, you'll get a very sort of skewed idea of what's going on around the country. And they do, I think, to their fault, concentrate a lot on case numbers. And I've never been a big proponent of concentrating on case numbers because, again, if you do more testing, you're going to get more cases. You've got to sort of figure out what's going on at a very individualized level, and it's never been more important than with a story like this.
Well, skewed, and I would even go to venture to say probably going to be more of a negative outlook when you look at a lot of these different cases.
And that's unfortunate, too. I think we're sort of caught up in this narrative, and I think this is a problem with the press, is that we are sort of concentrating bad news leads. And I think particularly with this story, good news should lead just as much. If we are trending in a good direction, as we are right now, and again, it could just be temporary, but if we are trending in a good direction, good news should lead and should be very important in terms of how we're delivering news, because it just, if you give the idea that it's always bad, I mean, there's going to be governors, there's going to be mayors, there's going to be health departments, they're going to make bad decisions based upon public pressure that isn't necessarily applied in the right way if they're not getting the full story. The full story should include the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. But if it's trending in a good direction, let's be honest about that.
Talking journalism standards and local journalism, the importance of it, with Chris Vanderveen, the director of reporting for 9 News. Last topic here that I want to dive into, it's kind of interesting that it comes up because a couple of writers over at the Colorado have been taking some heat for a story that was published about CSU. The main reason, seeing anonymous sources, Chris, talk us through, when and why and if anonymous sources should be as reliable and as trusted as people who are putting their name on the accusations.
It's a really, really interesting discussion, and I believe in the importance of anonymous sources. As a journalist, there are people under certain circumstances that simply cannot use their name for a variety of reasons, but that news is still important to get out there. But here's where trust becomes a critical factor. If you've lost trust and you're just saying you have an anonymous source, people are going to be more inclined not to believe that you're telling the truth. So if you use anonymous sources, you should use them on a very, very limited basis, and you should be upfront with your audience as to why you're using an anonymous source in that case. We here at 9 News have a policy when we go with sourced information, what we call it, we have to get two independent sources to tell us the same thing before we'll go with something that could be a really hot topic journalistic story. We have to have two sources to do that. That's a standard within the industry. It's not just us. Almost everybody has that standard. But at the same time, it's got to be limited, and you can't just use it willy-nilly to sort of use it when you want to or sort of advance a story. We have to have higher standards, particularly now when people are so skeptical of what they're hearing from us. We have to give reasons for them to trust us more, now more than ever, because we have a skeptical audience, and we can't continue to give them reasons, give the public reasons to continue to be skeptical of what we're reporting.
Chris, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, and keep fighting that good fight, and we appreciate the way that you lay it out there, because, hey, I'm a simple man, and we got good news or we got bad news, and I like the way that you say it, my friend. You call it how you see it. Chris, thanks so much for joining the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. It's Chris Vanderveen, the director of reporting from 9 News. I thought a great conversation there. And again, the trends are good. And this is, goes back to what I was talking about when you talk about the police rally. Yeah, that's leading bad news with it. So we need to continue to refocus and reset, because people are done. Like I've said this a number of times, people are fed up with just about everything right now. One way or the other, you're fed up with stuff. And it's important to reset and look around and, for lack of a better term, smell the flowers, right? Sit back and say, okay, here's where we're really at, because it's so easy to get consumed with negative headlines and negative narratives and so much negativity going on. Take a minute, take a step back and say, when's the last time I focused on something positive? When's the last good story I've read? Because a lot of it is psychology, and you dive into it and you start to go negative, 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 negative. You're going to get into that negative mindset. But take a step back, look at the good news. Good news with the COVID-19 cases. Good to hear, too, a guy like Chris, who's been in the field for a long time working for 9 News, to say case numbers are, they're tricky to navigate. It's really the hospitalizations. So when you're talking about case numbers, you got to be very wary about what you're seeing. 4:53 now, the time. We need to take a break. We'll come back on the other side, get to the headline that caught my eye, and we'll wrap up the Monday edition of NoCo Now on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Want the whole sports story in Northern Colorado, the state, and the country? Tune into The Hull Show, weekdays noon to 2 and 1310 KFKA.
.455, the time now here on NoCo Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. And, well, I want to say thanks to Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance Agency. He's got low, and when I mean low car insurance rates right now. And he wants you to call him to just ask about it. See what they're offering. See what they've got for you. It's Mark Larson again. He's not going to just be like, I got you to call me. That's not what he's all about. Mark Larson is going to provide you with the best information. If he didn't, he wouldn't be around for as long as he has been. He's been here for, believe, 30 years now. So Mark Larson, he knows what he's doing. 4:56, let's get to the headline that caught my eye. We were talking about positive news, so we better stay there. Satellites reveal there are 20% more emperor penguin colonies in Antarctica than previously thought. I love penguins. They are so dumb, but I love them so much. A new study using the satellite mapping technology revealed this. Researchers reported this week how they used images from the European Commission's Copernicus Sentinel 2. It's a satellite mission to locate the birds. Also, how do I get that job? Because that's what the job I want. I want to look at a bunch of penguin colonies. They found 11 new breeding colonies, three of which were previously identified but never confirmed. That takes the global census to 61 colonies. Who knew that penguins lived in colonies either? I didn't know that's what they called them. Emperor penguins need sea ice to breed and are located in areas that are very difficult to study because they are remote and often inaccessible with temperatures as low as negative 58 degrees Fahrenheit. For the last 10 years, British and Antarctic Survey scientists have been looking for new colonies by searching for their guano stains on the ice. This is an exciting discovery, says lead author Dr. Peter Fretwell. The new satellite images of Antarctica's coastline have enabled us to find these new colonies. So, rest easy. Now you know that penguins live in colonies, but you also know there's more of those colonies out there than previously thought. That'll about do it for us here on Inoko Now, but I'm going to shift gears as soon as we're done here. One of those other hats that I wear is the being one of the preps guys here at KFKA. We start 13 days, 13-team softball edition presented by PDC Energy. I've got the Eaton Reds coming up next. We're going to talk with Dale Hughes, head coach. We're going to talk with Chad Shaw, the assistant coach, Allie Schmidt, and Jenny Jarnigan. All of that coming up next. Don't go anywhere. For the full list of all of that, you can go online to 1310kfk.com. Thanks to Chris Vanderveen for joining us, Director of Reporting at 9 News. Tomorrow, Celeste Ewert with Envision going to join us, as well as Kevin Lytle. We're going to talk about this story that just came out about CSU and Mountain West football and fall athletics being postponed. It's a busy, busy time. NOCO doesn't stop, neither do we. We'll be back with you tomorrow. It's been NOCO Now, presented by the J9 Agencies. For Ryan Kelly, I'm Tanner Schwint. We'll talk to you tomorrow.